Hello, everybody. This is Bob Main. You're listening to another episode of today's Survival Show, where it's my goal to help you harness the power of choice to live life on your own terms and strengthen your resolve. I try to keep survival simple, not extreme. This is a common sense preparedness show. I don't engage in a lot of tinfoil hat type thinking. And in this show today, I'm going to talk about making plans again. You know, I really believe that people don't plan to fail, they just fail to plan. And if you remember a few weeks back, I played an audio clip of a member of our forum who also has a YouTube channel, Chris Harper. He goes by Ghostwriter on the forum. He's going to join me here towards the end of the program here. Actually, he's going to be the majority of the program, the interview between Chris and I. So I'll give you a little bit more details on that here in just a few moments. But I'd like to talk to some of you out there who are relatively new, and even some of you who are experienced preppers. What I'd like to say is plans, backup plans, and backup plans to your backup plans, I really believe, are so important. And you could do a lot of planning for not much money. That's one of the great things about preparedness, is that planning doesn't cost much. And if you're smart and you know how to barter, which I'm a big believer in bartering, now, before the stink hits the fan, not after, but barter now. I mean, yes, you might be bartering after. Okay, I'll take that back. You know what, folks? Somebody on another forum put a post up there about bartering, and they asked, what would it be like to if we have to barter after the crap hits the fan? Well, I put a response on there saying, why wait until the crap hits the fan to barter? Do it now. I've done a lot of trading of goods and services. You know, a lot of you know that I'm in the security business. Lately, I've made the switch from home security to commercial security products. That's what I sell. Access control and commercial security products. And the thing that I have found is that people like to trade for services. And I'm kind of going off on a little bit of a tangent here, but I think bartering is also a form of planning. I think it's a form of thinking outside the box. And that's what I'd like to encourage you to do. And as I drive down the road here, I'm trying to get a little bit of business done today, but I often do this show while I'm in my vehicle, taking advantage of some windshield time. As I drive down the road, I started thinking about, how do I motivate people to think out of the box? So that's kind of what this show is about. When I bring Chris on, he's going to talk about some plans, and some family survival plans. He's going to kind of expand a little bit on the audio clip that I played from his YouTube channel. And so I'm not going to give away too much of his information, but I just want to ask you a question. As you're thinking about your preparedness lifestyle and as you're planning things out, are you thinking outside the box a little bit? Now, don't go to the extreme. You know, too often we're called extremists. My wife the other day, just because I was repacking up some of my survival items in my car, in my vehicle kit and so forth, and I threw a couple coats in there. She goes, you're not getting too carried away with this stuff, are you? And see, folks, you know, we have to fight a battle sometimes, because no, I'm not getting too carried away with this stuff. I don't go to the tin foil hat extreme. But, you know, she doesn't really come from a background of doing a lot of preparations. And, you know, just recently I've gotten real serious about it. I mean, the last 3 or 4 years is when I've gotten real serious. You know, I started waking up after September 11th. I've told you that story before. September 11th was kind of the whack on my head that woke me up. But I didn't get real serious about preparedness until the last, I would say, about 3.5 years. And so we do have to guard against going to the extreme. And that's one of the things that I do want to warn you about. But you know what? You know, you're going to hear Chris and I talk a little bit about how there's about 97 to 98% of the people out in the world that don't prepare. At least I know here in the United States. I have international listeners, and I don't know what goes on in your countries. You know, recently I had a couple members join the forum and listen to the podcast from Europe. I don't know what, you know, goes on as far as the amount of preparedness that's in your countries. I don't know how people are preparing there. But I can tell you here in the United States, there's a lot of unprepared people. Here in the U.S., there's probably, I would say, Chris is probably right, I would say probably 95 to 96% of the people don't prepare. Isn't that awful? I mean, think about it. Think about the millions of people that are going to be up a creek if something bad happens. Now, do I think we should be freaking out all the time? No. We shouldn't be freaking out all the time. But you got to ask yourself a question. You know, is the government really going to take care of you? I mean, all you got to do is go back and look at Hurricane Katrina and ask yourself, geez, is the government really going to, you know, take care of me? Do you really think, seriously, folks, I want to talk to you for a minute here. I want to kind of engage in some frank talk here. Do you really think that our government has gotten better at handling emergencies since September 11th and since Hurricane Katrina? Do you really think that they've gotten better? Do you really want to trust them? I'm not being an anti-government activist here. That's not me. All right? So please, anybody who's listening to this show, don't think that I'm some kind of a wacko. I'm some kind of a anti-government, you know, crazy loon. No, I'm not saying that. I just know this. I know government's not efficient. It's just not efficient. And I don't think the government can do a very good job of taking care of over a couple of hundred million people that are not prepared if it's a wide-scale disaster. That's all I'm saying. And I think a lot of other governments in other parts of the world may not be prepared either for that. So a lot of governments don't have the resources of the United States government. And so if the United States government is inadequate, what does that make other governments in the world? I'd say they're probably just as inadequate or possibly even a little bit more. What do you think? I'd enjoy some comments on that. I mean, you know, some of you work for the government. Some of you have firsthand experienced some government assistance or lack of government assistance after there's been a disaster in your area. I'd like to hear some comments. If you have some comments about that, there's going to be a thread on the forum about this show. So let me go ahead and extend the invitation if you have not become a member of our forum. We got a great forum called Today's Survival Show Forum. And just click the forum button at the top of the page at todayssurvival.com. And it'll tell you exactly how to sign up and get involved. There's a lot of good people on that forum that want to converse with you, and they're like-minded and share good ideas. You can also put a comment directly on the blog page at todayssurvival.com. My blog page is the same page that hosts my podcasts, so you can also stream the podcasts off of the page, or you can download them to your MP3 player or computer that way. Also, if some of you like firearms, let me invite you to listen to the other podcast that I do. It's called the Handgun World Show, and I talk a lot about guns over there. I try to keep today's survival show not focused on firearms. I like to keep this show focused on preparedness. In other words, preparing our life, and sometimes that's more important, folks. I think sometimes it's more important to be prepared in your life than it is to own guns. Now, some people might think that's a little bit strange for me to say, all right, because I am a gun lover. I do love firearms. I think it's one of the fundamental rights that we in the United States possess. And it's one of the fundamental rights that keeps us free. The ability to own and use firearms helps keep us free. But preparedness is not all about that. You know, some guy with a couple of AR-15s and 1,000 rounds of .223 ammo and a whole bunch of extra magazines and half a dozen MREs thinks he can survive. And he's wrong if he thinks he can survive a major disaster that way. He's not going to be able to. And I don't believe in taking things by force either. You know, you get a lot of those internet commandos out there. You ever see posts like that on the internet? Oh, I got my AR-15 and I got a bunch of ammo and MREs. I'm gonna go fight and take what I want. Really? You know, I got news for you if you're that kind of a thinker. You're probably gonna get a lot of resistance from people. If the crap really hits the fan, you're probably gonna get a lot of resistance from people when you go to try to take whatever you want by force and by violence. I don't believe in that. I don't advocate that. And I don't think that that's really going to work and serve you well long term. Just my personal opinion. Sometimes it comes out. You're free to disagree with me if you want. That's okay. Just have a good basis for your disagreement and let me hear it. I enjoy comments. I'm an open-minded guy. But again, I kind of got off a little bit sidetracked there, but I just want to say, are you thinking out of the box with your planning and your preparations? So think about this. Do you have a backup plan in case you were to lose power at your house to heat your house in the winter? Do you have a backup plan to cool your home in the summer? Do you have a financial backup plan? You know, I got to talk a little bit about finances for a minute, because I'm a huge believer that finances play an important role in our preparedness. I mean, think about it, folks. You know what? Even if the crap hits the fan, even if it's really, really bad, it would have to get really bad for our entire financial system and our entire money system to collapse. Okay, I'm not saying that can't happen. Please don't say that, you know, I think it's impossible for our financial system to collapse completely. But it's not likely. That's just my personal view on that. But I also think that preparedness and survival starts today. It starts today before anything happens. It makes you a stronger person today. It makes you think and plan your life today, which makes you stronger right now. So do you have a backup financial plan? Just recently, my wife and I hit a huge financial goal. Huge. We now have a fully funded emergency fund. And you know, Dave Ramsey talks a lot about this. If you've ever read his book, Total Money Makeover, I strongly recommend Dave Ramsey's book, Total Money Makeover. I read that book. I also recommend that you take one of his courses. There's a lot of 13-week courses. I'm pretty sure it was once a week we went. We went once a week for 13 weeks. So it was 13 classes. It changed our life, folks. It was tremendous. So we recently hit our goal of a fully funded emergency fund. That's 6 months' worth of expenses in the bank. We had to dip into that a little bit for some medical expenses over the past few months, and we've now replenished that, and we've got half of our college education, our son's college education, put away. So it's a good feeling, folks, to know that here I am, 49 years old, I still got plenty of life left in me, I still got plenty of working time left in me, and earning power left in me, and we've already got a completely funded emergency fund. Long term, actually probably closer, the more I think about it here, the more I add this up in my mind, it's actually about a year. About a year's worth of income saved in the bank. Year's worth of expenses, excuse me. In other words, if I was out of work for a year, sure hope it doesn't happen. But if I was, I could pay the bills and live just as well as I'm living now for an entire year. And about half of what we estimate that it's going to cost for our son to go to college is already saved up and in the bank as well. So that's huge, folks. I'm telling you, I can't stress strongly enough how important that is and how good of a feeling it is and how much better I sleep at night knowing that. Now, my wife and I can develop a plan to start doing some pretty aggressive investing. And we're not going to take too many chances. I'm going to diversify. I'm going to spread everything out and diversify and try to protect myself as many ways as I can, investing in some gold, probably investing in some silver, probably doing some bond investing, although I got to pick those carefully, and probably stay out of the stock market right now and just invest in more safe stuff, but aggressively put things away. I may take a few risks here and there. I'll probably take about 15 or 20% of what I'm going to invest and take a risk with that. You got to take some risk. See, we didn't get to this point where we're at right now without taking some risk. There's always a risk and reward scenario. Typically, the rewards are end up being higher for someone who takes a risk, but then again, sometimes the losses can be higher. So I'm not giving financial advice here because I'm far from a financial planner. But I just wanted to throw that out and ask you, are you making a plan like that? Do you have a clear-cut plan? And don't get frustrated if you don't have 6 months' worth of expenses in the bank right now. I can tell you what, it certainly doesn't happen overnight. Not by any stretch of the imagination, but as long as you have a plan. You know, that's all I care about is, do you have a plan to get there? Do you have a time frame? Do you have a goal? Do you have a clear-cut way that you're going to get to that point? I urge you to do that. It's a wonderful feeling. Okay, so next, do you have an alternative way to gather your food supply? Let's say, for example, something happens and you can't get to the store. You know, maybe it's not a major catastrophic event, but maybe it's a relatively short-term weather event that makes it difficult for you to get to the nearest store. Something as simple as that. Okay? And, you know, are you going to be able to eat for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? Now, for some of you who are experienced preppers, you might be saying, Bob, what do you mean? I got a year's worth of food put back. Good, that's fine. That's great. That's terrific. If you have a year's worth of food, or 2 years, or 3 years worth of food put away, fantastic. There's so many people who don't. I'm telling you what, there are people right now, if I were to go to inspect their pantries and inspect their refrigerator, I bet I would find about a week's worth of food and that's it. I'm serious, folks. I'm serious. You know what? Just ask some questions to somebody who's a non-prepper and just ask them. You know, how long do you think you could survive? How long do you think you could eat? How long do you think you could eat and drink and bathe? If you couldn't go to the store, based on what you have right now in your house, how long do you think it would last you? Ask that question. Try me out. If you don't believe me, just ask some people that question. I'll bet a week is the majority of people's preparations. That's it. And so think about all that stuff and ask yourselves the tough questions and do you have a plan? And I'd say just put your plans in writing and go to work on them. All right? So I'd like to take some time here to do some announcements, to get some announcements out, to knock them out real quick before I bring Chris on. So let me go ahead and do that. As I mentioned earlier, the website is todayssurvival.com. The website to find my other show, Handgun World Show, is handgunworld.com. Both of my podcasts are on iTunes. And by the way, to all of you who are iTunes subscribers, I'd like you to do me a favor, would you? Would you go on iTunes and just write a review of the show? Let me know what you think of it. It also helps if there's other people that are checking out the show for the first time. It helps them to see what you think about it. And you know what? If you've got some constructive criticism, I don't mind you doing that. I don't mind you putting that on there. It also helps me, folks. It helps me tailor this show to what my audience would like to hear and what matters to them. That's what I'm concerned about. What matters to you? What do you like about what I'm doing and what don't you like about what I'm doing? So if you wouldn't mind writing an iTunes review, I'd very much appreciate that. Or put some comments. You know what? Every time I post a show, every time I put up a podcast on the main website, there's always a comments section right underneath all of the show notes. And sometimes people use that, and I would encourage you to use that. I check that every day. And if you have show suggestions, I would love to hear show suggestions. I got another excellent interview probably coming up next week. If you'd like to interview with me on this show, if you have some things you'd like to discuss on preparedness and survival, hey, I'd like to hear what you have to say. Folks, please don't always listen to me. Man, I'm just an everyday, ordinary guy. I'm no one special, folks. I'm really not. So, you know, I like to bring other people. You know, there's so many of you out there that have a wealth of knowledge that listen to this show or participate in the forum. You have incredible amounts of knowledge. And that's why I like to have people on this show. So if you want to do a brief interview, I'll send you an outline. We'll talk about some things in advance. And I would love to have you on the show. Just send me an email. Bob@todayssurvival.com is my email. I would love to hear from you. And that pretty much knocks out the announcements. So thanks again for hanging in there with me. So I'm going to take about a 15-second break here. And then you're going to hear just a little bit of music. And I'm going to bring the interview on with Chris Harper. Now, I've got to warn you about something, folks. My Skype program was not working very well. And my recording software for my Skype calls, the settings were not adjusted very well, and it didn't turn out. So you're going to hear the second version of my interview with Chris, and I had to record it the old-fashioned way. I had to put him on speakerphone and just record the call. And so the audio quality is not what you're used to hearing from this show, and I apologize for that. But, you know, I wanted to get this interview done. I put Chris through it twice. I didn't want to put him through it a third time because I couldn't get my Skype stuff working. I think I've got all that computer stuff all fixed now. So the next time I do an interview, you should have the excellent quality that that you're used to hearing. But forgive me on this. However, you're still going to be able to understand everything we're talking about. Please accept my apologies on that. So, okay, 15-second break or so, and on the backside of the break, you're going to hear the interview. Now, I am not going to come back on when this is over. You'll just hear music to close out the show. Don't go away. Interview with Chris Harper coming right up.
Okay, everybody, for the main topic, I have another forum member on the line. Actually, I've got Chris Harper, also known as Ghost Rider from the forum, and we're going to do another interview. How you doing, Chris?
Good. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing great. You know, I got to apologize to all the listeners up front. If this sounds a little funny, I'm having to record this conversation the old-fashioned way because Skype didn't work. And so typically we do a Skype call, but I had some kind of an internet connection problem. So we're going to talk about disaster preparedness. Is that okay with you?
That works for me.
All right. Let me introduce Chris to everybody because there's a lot of new listeners to the show lately, which is a good thing, but Chris has been on our forum a long time. He's been a long time listener to the show, and you're an EMT, aren't you?
Correct, yeah, among lots of other things, but yeah, that's kind of my main duty, EMT and emergency manager.
You wear a lot of different hats.
Yeah, exactly.
Emergency manager, okay, and an EMT. So, Chris and I did a couple of interviews about first aid and so forth. And so, but this is not going to be about first aid. This is going to be about making plans. So let's talk about disaster plans, Chris. What do you want to start off with to encourage people to plan?
Well, first of all, I figured we'd talk about a little bit of the basics, kind of go over some basic things and then talk about plans. Because, you know, like you said, there's a lot of new people out there, and then some of the older people may not know some of the things that we might talk about. So basically, what I like to ask people is, why do we prepare? You know, what's the purpose of us preparing? And basically, you know, disasters occur every day.
Yes, they do.
A lot of people think of disasters as being a global disaster or a natural disaster. But really, disasters can be personal, local, state, regional, global. You know, it depends on what it is. And so that's one of the biggest things that you have to ask people. And then, you getting some feedback there?
No, I'm fine.
Oh, okay. And then you got to ask yourself, well, what are the benefits? What are the benefits of being prepared? And the biggest benefit is it reduces fear and anxiety. And that's the main thing. In a disaster, everybody's stress level is going to be elevated. And if you're prepared for the disaster, it reduces that fear and that anxiety. And that way you can go on through the disaster and work out very well.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and fear and anxiety it's so immobilizing to a lot of people whenever there's some kind of an emergency.
Exactly.
You know, I like to talk a lot about the stress level of people. People's stress level tends to go through the roof in a disaster, and sometimes they can't think clearly, and I think if you're prepared, you're going to be able to think more clearly.
That's exactly right. And if nothing ever happens, what are you out? I mean, truly, honestly, you're not out a whole lot. You may be out some spare time or a little bit of extra food in your pantry that you're going to eat anyway. So you're not out a whole lot if nothing ever happens. So that's, if you plan for things and nothing ever happens, then you really got not out anything.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, Chris, and that is, you know, what have you lost? I mean, you're going to have to eat anyway. You're going to have to drink. You're going to have to take your medications. You're going to have to, you know, have some basic supplies anyway, and you're going to have ways to heat your homes and so forth. So what are you out?
Yeah, exactly. And what a lot of people don't realize, and we'll kind of go over a couple of definitions really quick and ask people, you know, what is a disaster? You know, in my world, my public safety world, a disaster is when your needs exceed your resources.
Good
so,
point.
For example, a pile-up accident on the interstate with 12 patients may not be a really big disaster in one county, but two counties over, that's a, you know, major disaster for them.
Yeah.
When
your needs exceed your resources, I like that.
Everything from just a regular natural disaster to something man-made. You know, so that they can be various different things. And then there's something that's called a catastrophe. You know, everybody's heard of a catastrophe, but what is the definition of a catastrophe? And basically, that's when your need exceeds all ability to respond to that particular incident. 8.0 earthquake hits in Southern California and another 9.0 earthquake hits up in the Oregon coast or something like that, you plan for those incidences, but you can't respond to them because it's so great. It overwhelms you so much that you're not able to respond.
Good point.
That's a catastrophe. And a catastrophe can also occur when that disaster gets out of hand. You know, you may not have planned properly or adequately practiced your response plan to that particular incident or disaster, so it can get out of hand. So that can also turn into a catastrophe as well.
Well, now, you just said something interesting there. You're not able to execute your response plan. I think the key word there is plan. Would you agree?
Oh, I agree. Yeah, you definitely have to have a plan, and planning starts, you know, at home. And for your plans, and for really anything, disaster preparedness-wise or, you know, in our prepper lifestyle, keep things simple. You have to keep it simple. And I've, in one of my videos that I spoke on, I've seen disaster plans that have just been drawn out hundreds of pages, and it's just ridiculous because in the event of a disaster, nobody's going to want to thumb through 500 pages to get to what they're supposed to do during that particular incident. It's just not going to happen.
Boy, isn't that the truth. But, you know, Chris, let me ask you a question. Why is it that you think that people don't tend to plan?
I think they think it's too hard. They may think it's just too hard to plan, or they're always going to wait for somebody else to come in and bail them out. The government's going to be there. FEMA's coming to bail me out, so I don't have to plan for this incident. I think a lot of people think that way, and they shouldn't.
You know, I recently saw a post on a forum just a couple of days ago where someone was complaining because they still have family members that think, hey, the government's going to bail me out. And, you know, I'm scratching my head and I'm thinking, what's it going to take to prove to people that the government is not going to be there for you? I mean, you know, I think you mentioned this before. Let's look at Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
There's a classic example of the government not being there to bail somebody out.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, there's so many people that still think that way. And we talked about before, I did some research recently, and it's estimated that like 93% of Americans don't prepare for anything at all. You know, 93%, that's an awful lot of Americans, and it's probably higher than that actual number. And they just figure, you know, we're not going to prepare. There's no need to prepare. We're too complacent, I believe. You know, it's sad.
That's amazing. Let's think about that for a minute. I know there's over 300 million people in the United States, but for easy math, let's use 300 million. If 93% are not prepared, that's about 280 million that are not prepared.
Yeah. That's a lot of people.
Over a quarter of a billion people in the United States are not prepared. Now, what happens if there's a national disaster? You know, I don't like to get into a lot of crazy thinking and tinfoil hat kind of stuff on my show, but it is conceivable that there could be a natural disaster, or excuse me, a nationwide disaster of some kind. So all of a sudden we could have 270 million people running around not prepared?
Exactly. And that's scary because most of those people figure that the government's going to be there to bail us out.
And what do you think happens to those people after they go quite a ways, after there's an emergency, they go for a while and they're not prepared? What do they do?
They kind of go back and hide in a hole, I would think. I mean, it's, you know, once they can't get in, it's that they're not going to get any help, or help may be a long time away, those people are going to start looking to the people that do have the supplies and that are prepared and either come and try to take your stuff from you or, you know, whatnot. And that's just not what we need to have happen in this country if it ever gets to that point. Let's hope it never does.
Well, let's hope it never does, exactly. But, okay, so what kind of plans, if we're talking about the basics, what do you encourage people to start to do? Let's say somebody doesn't really have any hardcore plans of any kind. Where would you tell them to start?
Oh, I'd start with a simple evacuation plan. Let's think you're sitting in your house and say you're in the kitchen cooking, or somebody in your family's in the kitchen cooking, and all of a sudden there's a fire. And that fire suddenly engulfs the entire kitchen, and before you know it, the whole house is on fire. What are you going to do? Start there. That's a simple, easy thing. For my house, everybody's going to go outside and meet at the neighbor's house across the street. Even the kids know that. And so that's something simple, And once you start with that simple evacuation plan, then you kind of move on to other things in the evacuation plan, such as I'm driving home from work or school or whatever, and an incident has occurred near my neighborhood, and I can't get to my house.
Yeah.
What am I going to do then? Or I'm at my house, and the incident has occurred down the street, a chemical spill a couple miles away, and the first responders have to evacuate everybody within that particular area. How are you going to leave your house? And say you can't get to your regular routes that you generally travel. And that's most people travel the same route every single day. So you need to learn alternate routes to get to places and make sure that your other family members know how to get to those places as well.
Well, you know what? Can we elaborate on that point for a minute?
Yeah.
You know, I live in a big, big metro area here. I live in Dallas-Fort Worth. It's about the eighth or ninth largest metropolitan area in the country, depending on who you talk to. So, you know, we've got 3-4 million people here, and if there's some kind of a regional disaster that hits the Dallas-Fort Worth area, all of a sudden now we got millions of people scurrying around, and there's so many of them that don't know an alternative way to get out of town. That's scary, too.
That's exactly right. And like I said previous, you know, when we first moved to this county that we live in now, I say probably, I think it's 10 years ago now, when we first moved up here, I encouraged my wife, hey, get out, and when you're out driving from the grocery store, going to the grocery store, take that other road over there and see where it goes. It takes different routes and see where those take you.
Right.
Because you never know when you might have to use those different routes. I mean, it can be something that's just a wreck in the road there that's got traffic blocked up and you need to get around it. Well, if you didn't know those other routes, you wouldn't know how to go around that wreck. You'd be sitting there in traffic.
And there's so many people that take the same route every day, and that's all they know, and they sort of get tunnel vision. And I would encourage people to get on Google Maps and print a map of your geographical area within about 50 square miles and get a yellow highlighter and highlight 3 or 4 different ways out of your area on that map.
Yeah, exactly. And don't rely on GPS all the time. We're such a technology-based world right now that everybody is quick to rely on the GPS and other technological advances. Well, that may or may not be available, and it may not be accurate if it is available. So you getting out and physically driving and knowing those routes and knowing that there's a bridge here, and if it's raining and that bridge may be flooded, so you may need to go somewhere else. Now, GPS is not going to tell you that.
Not necessarily. No, it's not. And, you know, you kind of got me there, Chris, because I'm a GPS nut. I love the technology and stuff. But I also know, you know, you could drop me pretty much anywhere in the greater Dallas area. And I've gotten to know this area so well that I could probably figure out 3 or 4 different ways to get home, no matter where you dropped me.
Exactly. And you have a major advantage over all the other people who probably don't have that advantage.
Well,
just be sitting there in traffic if something were to happen.
One of the reasons I have that advantage is because, well, I've lived here a long time, but I'm also an outside sales. A lot of people know that. And being an outside sales, it forces me to learn the roadways. If somebody's listening to this and you're not the kind of person that does a lot of traveling, start exploring. When you go to work, start figuring out different ways to get to and from work, to and from the doctor, you know, to and from family members if you have them in the nearby area, and start memorizing those routes.
Yeah, you'd be amazed. It may actually take you a lot less time to get somewhere just by taking one street down or, you know, whatever. You never know until you drive it or until you try it.
And that goes back to what you were saying earlier. The benefit of nothing happening is at least you learn something along the way while you're preparing.
That's exactly right. And what I try to tell people all the time is there's so many people out there that when they first get into preparedness, they're preparing for the major global collapse, crap hit the fan, the major events. Yeah, that stuff could happen, but is it real likely in the near future to happen? I hope not. Plan for the stuff that occurs every day, at loss of jobs that are occurring at an astonishing rate right now. If you lose your job, that could be a personal disaster. It would be for us and my family. If we lost our jobs, that'd be a disaster for us.
Well, same here. And a lot of people don't realize this, but we're actually in the midst of a disaster right now. With this prolonged recession, I don't see how anybody could not call this a disaster. For a lot of people, it's been life-changing, and it's been very, very difficult for a lot of folks, and I call that a disaster.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
And then, like I said there, I mean, I try not to get, I'm with you, I don't like to go into the tinfoil hat type stuff and the crazy stuff, but it's a good possibility that we may see a depression in the future or something worse. I hope not, but you never know. But you have to start small, and if you start small and don't get yourself overwhelmed, it gets easier as it goes.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I just thought of something. I want to kind of take a little bit of a segue here. A couple of weeks ago, in case somebody hasn't had a chance to listen to that show, I played about 12 or 13 minutes of one of your videos. I played the audio portion, a very good series that you're doing on YouTube on disaster preparedness. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, my YouTube channel I've had for a while, for several years, but I just recently started posting videos late of 2009. But I do a lot of gear reviews and outdoor stuff, but I'm also doing a disaster preparedness series, and where this series is a series of videos to where we talk about everything disaster preparedness, everything from basically what we're talking about now to the disaster plans, to the kits, the bug out bags, to water, to food, to vehicle kits, home security, survival firearms. It's going to be a whole series of videos, and I think there's 3 posted now, and it's going to be probably at least 10, 15, maybe even more. So if you're into YouTube and want to check it out, check out my YouTube channel, and where all that stuff will be posted as well.
Why don't you give people the name of your YouTube channel so they can easily find it?
My YouTube username is C Harper, C-H-A-R-P-E-R, 3006. And if you put that in the search bar in YouTube, it'll get you to my page.
Yeah, and if some of you have trouble finding that, just go to the main page, todayssurvival.com. In the show notes for this episode, I'm going to put a direct link to Chris's YouTube channel. It's very good. I've watched, I think, 4 or 5 of your videos on there. I got to say, I need to start looking at some of your gear reviews a little bit more. Do you want to talk about some of those gear reviews?
I have a lot of different things, from knife reviews. I just recently got some new backpacks and stuff in that I'll be reviewing soon. I got some different types of fanny packs and whatnot on there. A lot of stuff on my first aid kits and that sort of thing. Those are on there too. Gear pods. So lots of different things. I try to keep my channel not just specific to one thing. I like to have a variety because I think people kind of get bored with watching the same videos. So that's kind of where the disaster preparedness thing is going. It's kind of taking a little shift. But in the midst of doing those videos, I'm also going to put the reviews up as well so people don't get bored.
Yeah, well, that's good. And for those of you who want to listen to the first aid podcast that Chris and I did several months ago, I think it was probably 5 or 6 months ago, also check the main page, todayssurvival.com. And in today's show notes, I'll also put links to those 2 episodes as well. And since we're talking about your YouTube channel and first aid and stuff like that, why don't you talk a little bit about some basic plans, like I would say first aid plans that people should have. What are some of the basics they should have?
Everybody should have a basic family first aid kit. And in that first aid kit, it should really cover the basics. If you have kids like I do and like you do, and most people I think that listen to the show do, if you have kids, the basic thing that you need is Band-Aids. A lot of Band-Aids.
Yeah.
Because 9 times out of 10, you're going to get a regular cut or scrape that's going to be able to be fixed just by a Band-Aid. And there's been a lot of people, especially on YouTube, that have said that you need to get this elaborate stuff, you know, stuff like Quick Clot and, you know, sutures and all that stuff. All that stuff is good to have if you know how to use it.
Right.
But basic Band-Aids, basic stuff like wound cleaning stuff, peroxide, iodine, Neosporin, some 4x4s, tape, scissors, stuff like that. Just your basic first aid items. That's what everybody should have. And a lot of people leave out stuff like Tylenol and ibuprofen and children's Tylenol and stuff for upset stomach and diarrhea. people leave out those things, but that's also included in your first aid kit.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Chris, because, you know, here we are in January, and for most people in the United States, at least, it's winter time, and there's a lot of cold weather, and there's a huge threat of blizzards. As a matter of fact, as we're taping this right now, there's a report of a lot of cold weather and possibly some snow headed even for North Texas, here where I live. And so I think it's conceivable that people could find themselves in a situation where if you get snowed in by a blizzard, for example, you're not going to be able to get to medical help. So if you've got a kid that's injured, what are you going to do? You have to be able to take care of your family, you know, their family injuries as well.
That's exactly right. And that goes for, you know, anything else preparedness-wise. We're expecting snow here on Sunday and Monday, I believe, is what they're saying now here. So we don't get a lot of snow, so it's a, you know, kind of a big deal. And what I said previous is as soon as the weatherman down here in the South says there's going to be the big S word, snow or ice, the grocery stores get packed and crowded. And if you're prepared and you have food at home, you don't need to get out in all that mess and risk getting into a car wreck or worse with all the other idiots. You've already got stuff prepared at home. So you're set at home sitting down watching it on the news and knowing that everything's going to be okay.
Man, don't you hate that? Don't you hate that when there's, you know, I mean, it's like a bunch of, you know, cockroaches that are at the grocery store because people didn't prepare, and then all of a sudden they're cleaning out the shelves, and it's just a mess. I actually kind of hope it does snow here because I'm ready, I'm prepared, and I think it's going to be kind of a cool, cool change.
Yeah, me too. I mean, same here. I mean, I still have to go to work, but if the kids are out of school, I mean, they have stuff here. They have food and everything here, too, so I won't be worried about them while I'm at work. And that's the biggest thing. I mean, when you're doing all this and preparing and getting into the mindset that we are as far as the preppers and modern survivalists, it's my goal as a father and as a husband to protect my family and take care of them no matter what the cost. Right. So for me, doing the prepping, I figure that's what I'm supposed to do.
Right. And that's, yeah, and, you know, do you find it frustrating, Chris, that most of the world looks at us that believe in preparedness as some crazy, loony weirdos living out on the fringe of society, and all we want to do is just be ready for whatever comes our way? I don't know what's so weird about that.
I don't either. I think that we kind of got a bad name, I guess, back in the, you know, 70s and 80s and the Red Dawns and all that stuff. And, you know, there's been a lot of other incidences with, you know, survivalists, I guess, if you want to say, with the law and stuff like that. But I think the more and more people start talking about it and more the word get out about prepping and modern survivalism, the less people look at us as the nut jobs, you know, up in the bunker somewhere. And if there's people that are listening that are those type of people, that's great. I mean, I'm not trying to put those people down, but you get the old saying, you know, one bad apple in the whole bunch, and you've kind of ruined everybody, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and make no mistake about it, I would love to possess the skills to be able to go out in the woods with nothing but a small backpack and live for 30 days. I would have to admit, I'd have to admit right now on this show, I couldn't do that because I don't really know how, and those are some skills I'd like to possess. But as you said earlier in this interview, that's not real likely that I'm going to have to do that.
Exactly, and there's still a whole lot of people out there that think that they got the case of MREs and 1,000 rounds of, you know, 223 and their AR-15, and they're off to, you know, they're good. You know, they can survive forever. That's not the case. And people need to realize that and to wake up and understand that, you know, you need more food than just MREs. And, you know, I eat every day. I can't eat that ammo.
You
so,
can't
yeah,
eat
gonna
the
have
ammo,
ammo,
no. And,
yeah, I'm going to have the ammo and the guns and everything, too, but you're going to eat. So in my other videos, I'm going to put a lot of emphasis on food storage. Yeah, I'm going to talk about survival firearms and stuff like that, but a lot of emphasis is going to go on food and water storage. That are one of your two basic needs. I mean, you have to have food and you have to have water. You don't necessarily have to have an AR-15 and 10,000 rounds of ammo.
That's right. And the ammo doesn't taste very good to eat, does it?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. I mean, it's bitter, you know, it's just horrible.
And the last time I checked, the AR-15 is not going to give you much shelter either.
No, it's not.
And I don't think you're going to be able to fix too many wounds if somebody gets injured with ammo and guns.
No, you're not.
You know, people who have been listening to me long enough, everybody knows I love guns. I love firearms. In fact, I do another podcast on firearms, and that's all we talk about. But preparedness is not just about having guns, having ammo, beans, bullets, and band-aids. It's a lot. It goes beyond that, and I'm glad you're talking about that stuff.
That's right, and a lot of people, I think, don't realize that when they start getting into preparedness or when they see us, they figure that that's all it is, but it's not. Once you get into it, and slowly you start realizing that, hey, you know, it's not all about beans, bullets, and band-aids. You do have to do other things as well and have redundancies built into your systems and to your plans. And that's one simple thing other people can do for their plan, not to kind of get off track, but kind of talking about plans again, is inventory your possessions. How many people actually know what they have? Go through your house with a video camera and a still camera and take pictures and take video, and especially of serial numbers of your items, because if you have to file an insurance claim for whatever reason, you know, you can tell your insurance agent, hey, I've got, you know, I have 5 big screen TVs, 3 laptop computers, and 44 guns in here, and I want replacement costs for all those. But if you don't have proof of any of that stuff, your insurance agent's probably going to say, yeah, okay, and we'll just write you a check for this other amount.
That's,
you need to have all that stuff.
That's a very good point. And even if you do have a generous insurance agent, they really appreciate it when they have backup documentation from you, and it typically speeds up the processing of your claim, too.
Oh, it definitely. And I'm fortunate right now. I've never had to file an insurance claim, but I've talked to a bunch of people who have. And the people who have taken pictures and stuff like that, it has helped them along throughout the process.
Well, let me tell you what I do, and tell me if you think I need to improve on this or not. I have all of my, you know, important valuables. They're either photographed or, the details of them are written down and appraisals and everything. And I have scanned those documents into my computer, and I've saved them to a flash drive. I've made photocopies of those documents and pictures, and I've put those in my safe deposit box. And then let's see, what's the third? Oh, and then the third is there's copies of most of them in my bug out bag.
Yeah, that's excellent. I think everybody should do that. And that's one of my plans for this year, is to work on my plan. I've got it just in one spot now, because I really haven't had the time to make the other copies and all that stuff, and I'm slowly adding some more things to it. So that's one of the things, my goals is for early this year, is to get that completely done, have it in separate places, put it on a thumb drive as well. You know, maybe you can store that at somebody else's house, or like you said, your safety deposit box, but it also needs to be in your bug out bag or somewhere like that, and in the event that you do have to grab and go, you will have it.
Yeah.
Stuff like your marriage licenses, your social security cards, your immunization records, your homeowner's insurance, and all that stuff, yeah, it can be replaced, but it's going to be extremely difficult to prove you have all that and to replace all that stuff after a disaster occurs.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think a lot of people don't realize that either. And we take some of these things for granted, but it's extremely difficult to get a Social Security replacement card. If nobody's ever tried, it's extremely hard. And it's extremely hard to get a replacement birth certificate as well.
Try getting a replacement passport. That's tough.
Yeah, birth certificates here, I don't know how it is for other states, but I know here it's extremely difficult to do.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's, you know, they don't want you to have it or whatever. It's just the process of calling this person and getting to the right place, and then you have to prove that, all that mess.
And that's stuff you don't want to have to be bothered with when there's been some kind of an emergency.
Exactly.
You know,
because everybody's stress level is going to be so high and through the roof, you don't want to have, that's extra stress, added stress, and you want to keep that stress level down. A disaster causes so much more stress than what people realize. And especially if you have young kids, they're going to be extremely stressed.
Exactly. You know, I love what Cody Lundeen says. You know, he says that that survival is probably 85 or 90% psychological, and I agree with them on that. So it makes me think about something. What's a person's psychological state going to be after some kind of a disaster hits?
Probably not where it should be. I mean, they'd definitely be not in the right mindset or frame of mind.
Yeah, and so my point is, and your point as well, that we're both trying to make here, is the more plans that we have, the more preparations that we take, the better psychological state of mind we're going to be in if there's some kind of an emergency to be able to execute that plan.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can have all the money in the world and have all of the preparations in the world and the food and everything that you think you need to survive. But if you don't have the mental capacity when something happens to know what to do, then all that stuff is just wasted.
Yeah, you're right. Well, you know, before we finish up this call, I wanted to ask you something. I want to talk to you about vehicle kits for a minute. I have two vehicles, and I have a vehicle emergency kit in each one. And I got to tell you, my vehicle emergency kit has helped me and saved me so many times. They were minor disasters. They were minor issues. But it was such a huge convenience, and it really doesn't take up that much room. And what I'd like to tell everybody is I took a couple of old range bags, old shooting bags that I didn't want to use anymore. And instead of throwing them away, I stuffed them full of emergency vehicle supplies, and they don't take up much room, and it worked out great. What about you?
I agree. I did something similar. I have a military type backpack. It's a smaller one. I did a review on it on my YouTube channel, and I did the same thing. And I call it my get home bag because if I'm out somewhere, that's going to be the bag that I'm going to need to get me home. And I have other things in my car as well, stuff like minor tools, jumper cables, you know, that aspect. You have to have all that stuff. I mean, like you said, people may think of it as an inconvenience, but what's going to happen when you need it?
Exactly.
You know, you're going to need it one day. And that's one of the biggest things. Like, I know a lot of times spouses can kind of be problems. My wife, for example, she doesn't want me to put a big backpack in her car, you know, and leave it in there. She just doesn't want it in there. So I'm trying to have to make something smaller and go in her car. But it still covers the same things. It's just in a smaller form.
She'll be happy that you put it in there if there's an emergency someday.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Chris, thank you very much. We're kind of up to the stopping point, and I'd like to do a part two, because what I'd like to do is have you elaborate more on what kind of plans that you think people should make. But thanks for coming on the show today. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'll come back anytime.
Before I let Chris go, I just want to tell everybody again, Chris Harper on today's Survival Show Forum. His handle is Ghost Rider, and check out his YouTube channel. Why don't you give out that YouTube address one more time?
Yeah, it's youtube.com/user/CHARPER3006. Or you can just put in my username, which is CHARPER3006, in the search bar on YouTube, and it'll send you to my page or one of my videos.
Yep, CHARPER3006. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate you coming on today.
Hey, thanks, Bob.
All right, catch you later. Stay prepared, all right?
All right, you too.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.